I'm Colin Ellis, and for 30 years I was a permanent employee of other people's cultures. What I wanted to know more than anything else during that time was how to create a great culture myself. So I wrote a book called Culture Fix, which is the world's first how-to guide for building great workplace culture. And in this, the Culture Makers podcast, I get industry leaders from around the world to expand on the ideas I wrote about in the book and to get them to share actionable things that you can do to create a great place to work yourself. And remember, listening is good, but action is better. Hey everybody, on today's Culture Makers podcast, I talk to Carrie McIntyre. Carrie is a qualified civil engineer whose real passion is building and leading vibrant cultures within local government. With over 30 years of team building experience, Carrie is committed to providing leadership that is effective, professional and accountable. He is now General Manager of Shell Harbour City Council, who in 2019 won the prestigious AR Blewett Award in New South Wales, Australia, which recognises excellence in delivering progress and value to the community. And I'm delighted to welcome Carrie McIntyre to the Culture Makers podcast. Hello, Carrie.
Hey, Colin, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Now, I have the good fortune to not only have met, but also to work with you. And I know for a fact that you started life as an engineer. So you don't work, you didn't start life in people and culture, you started life as an engineer. What did you actually study from an engineering perspective?
So I studied civil engineering at Wollongong University, and I studied that full time and working the Kmart job, as you do. It was a long period of my time, of my life, because I have never pretended to be an excellent student. I really had to work hard just to get 51%, but I got there, and I was pleased in the end to do that. But I certainly was there for a while working in engineering within local government and then moved on.
And so for everyone who doesn't understand the Kmart job, just explain what the Kmart job is.
Okay, so the Kmart job is the job you do when you're trying to perhaps study at university or at some other educational institution. It's the job you take to pay for petrol in the car, pay for lunch, and also buy yourself a beer every now and then just to celebrate.
Often in England, it was the opposite way around. You start with the beer and then everything else fell after that. And so did you actually work for Kmart?
No, I literally worked for Kmart.
Oh,
and,
wow.
It was a good job, and I have to say, and we might talk about this a little bit later, but I think I learned everything I learned about customer service from working in a retail setting where it was a very competitive setting, and you certainly needed to understand what the customer wanted, what their needs were, and try and meet those. So I think I learned a lot about working with customers, working with the community, surprisingly perhaps, in that retail setting.
Well, let's talk about that now, Carrie, because this, for those people who've listened to the podcast a lot, what they'll recognize is that, you know, certainly for people who really value the importance of culture now, they had that grounding, they had that exposure. Most of them have done, certainly myself, done those little retail jobs to get going, and that's where they get that knowledge. And I think that's absolutely right, is you learn the importance of that interaction, putting yourself in service. Is that something that you found too?
Oh, I couldn't agree more. And I guess in that retail role, you really do need to listen to the customer, understand what their needs are. And I think that too often, even in my current industry, local government, I think too often we can assume we know what the customer wants, but it's not until we actually inquire and we actually ask them what they need that we can truly start to, I guess, design our response accordingly.
Yeah, and there's a lot to be said there for active listening and patience, courage to ask the right kinds of questions, which for me are a really good grounding into what good management looks like. Would you agree?
Couldn't agree more, Colin. And I think that patience that you talk about and that willingness to not be right all the time, I think, is important. And I used to mix paint. One of my many jobs at Kmart, I used to mix paint and put the colour in and stir it up. And sometimes I'd take the lid off and the customer would go, no, that's not what I wanted. And rather than get defensive and to try and assume that, again, you know everything and that this paint is fine and the colour is fantastic and it'll look great on your wall, sometimes you have to accept, well, okay, let's start again. Let's look at what you wanted and let's see if we can get it right this time.
I love that. Take the lid off the paint. They're like, no. And there's that moment where your heart sinks, right? Like, oh, no. And so, you know, we learn a lot about teamwork in those early days as well. And even though there's a kind of need to, or a desire really, to earn money, it's where we kind of make that transition from school, university, into an environment that often we're not really prepared for.
I think you're right. And I think that too often we see university students go straight into the workforce. And sometimes they've not been exposed to certainly what the customer that they work for may want, but they may not even have a lot of experience in working in teams, working obviously peer-to-peer, but also, I guess, working in a collaborative way with their managers and their leaders. And sometimes it can be quite an isolating experience, full-time study. So there certainly is, I guess, as you say, transition to come into the workforce and understand that, you know, it's not all about you and that it is about working in a team and it is about give and take, compromise.
Yeah, give, take, compromise. Yeah, we'll come back to that. So was it then straight into local government for you, Carrie, then kind of post-university?
Yeah, it was for me. I went into local government firstly in southwest Sydney at a city called Campbelltown, and then from there to Wollongong City Council, where I studied town planning. And I guess that was where I kind of moved into the next phase of my career. I moved out of engineering as such and then into town planning, which I guess gave me an opportunity to bring some design flair into the work I was doing, whereas engineering was probably a little bit more binary, a little bit more number crunchy. Whereas planning was a little bit more in the grey, and I enjoyed that.
And no doubt that required lots of interactions, not only with people inside the council. So for those of you who know where Wollongong is, it's about an hour and 15-minute drive, I think, south of kind of southeast, supposedly, of Sydney. Interaction with other teams, but also with the broader community too, Carrie, which requires those really strong ties, those strong relationships. And as we talked about before, kind of builds on those listening skills.
Yes, you're right. And certainly a philosophy that I use today in the organisation that I currently lead is something that I talk about often, and that is the four C's. And certainly in town planning, that philosophy was one that served me well. And the four C's is quite simple. It's simply the letter C, C for the community, C for councillor, which is like an alderman, an elected councillor. And the third C is the customer, which is a subset of the community. And finally, C for council, the organisation itself, its people, as you say, the peers that I work with, and also our finances. So the four C's is something that I guess started to become apparent to me in those roles in town planning. It's, as I said, it's something that 20 years on, I still apply equally as I lead the organisation that I currently lead.
In those early days in Campbelltown and then Wollongong, did you get your first managerial position there, Karen? And you know, kind of how were you prepared for that? Because quite a step up from kind of reporting to someone to actually having people report to you. Did that come at that stage?
Yeah, look, it did. And I guess to show some, perhaps some vulnerability, but certainly to tell it how it was, to answer your question, I wasn't prepared. And I came through the classic path of being technically competent, perhaps having some real skills in that technical area. But then leading people, very different proposition, and something that I really needed to take myself back to square one and learn from scratch. And I made mistakes. And I think that, again, if we treat leadership as a binary exercise, is one that only has yes, no, right, wrong, it's fraught. And I think that what I learned quickly as I moved into those management roles was the need to understand the people that worked with me, and I guess show some empathy, listen actively, and really try and understand what may be the barriers to their success, and I guess try and break those down with them.
And so then, so Wollongong Council, that became your kind of managerial breeding ground, I suppose. And then where to from there, Carrie?
Sure. Yeah, so from there, I moved into a more senior role in Camden Council, which is a council in southwest Sydney again. And it was a council that was growing in terms of population like Topsy. So it was growing rapidly. And I mean, it was a great place to be both an engineer and a town planner, but it was probably there that I moved into my first role as a leader. where I really needed to bring to bear all the skills that I had developed perhaps in Wollongong, but continued to learn and grow in Camden. So there I led about 90 people, and that was probably my first serious leadership role.
Yeah, quite a transition then, you know. I know in the past from our conversations, some of the leadership is a passion of yours. You just mentioned, you know, and I think often managers are very good at looking at their technical skills. But when it comes to leadership, you have to really look at yourself and kind of the environment that you're creating for others. Did you have a kind of deliberate way that you went about team building, Carrie? Was it organic? Was it based on what you'd learned, you know, from Kmart and beyond?
Yeah. Look, I think all of those. I think there was certainly an element that was organic, but I also brought to it some structure. And I guess that's my native thinking, if you like. Coming from an engineering background, I like to see a little bit of structure. I didn't use a spreadsheet, Colin, I promise. But certainly, I guess, yeah, planning days, opportunities for people to both have a bit of fun, but also gain some learning experiences out of it. But also organically, I guess, just trying to get to know the team better, understand what works for them, what doesn't. And I guess at that time, Colin, I also really grew my own insight and started to understand my own leadership strengths and certainly those things that I needed to further develop. And that's probably where I started to really look at myself as a leader and probably, yeah, just tried to build skills in understanding where I could contribute and perhaps where I needed to perhaps rely more on the skills of others.
So you've been heading up Shell Harbour City Council now for 5 years. What have you learned about yourself in the time that you've kind of assumed almost those CEO, you have assumed those CEO responsibilities, Carrie? Because it's one thing leading, managing a team, creating your own sense of, you know, kind of the subculture that you need to contribute. As the CEO, then how did your thinking change again? Because, you know, as someone who values culture, you know that you can't force it down. You mentioned the four C's. Was that the approach that you took to really work with the staff to get them to co-create what the culture would look like at Shell Harbour?
Yeah, certainly the 4Cs certainly underpinned the approach I took. One of the key lessons I guess I had to learn as I became CEO here at Shell Harbour City Council was to understand that I can't do it all. In other words, when it comes to sponsorship, when it comes to reinforcement and actually driving cultural improvement through an organisation, it's important to establish trusted coalition. And I've done that over the years by, I hope, recruiting well and building a great team of executive and senior managers who understand our core corporate behaviours, our vision, and really can support and, as I say, drive through the organisation that cultural improvement that we're trying to achieve here. It is an approach which is less common perhaps in local government, and therefore the challenge I guess for some managers and some leaders who have spent a long time in local government is to shift their thinking and perhaps humanise that thinking a little bit more than perhaps is traditionally the case in local government.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that about local government. You know, and as a former federal government employee myself, I think there are a lot of people in those environments telling you what's not possible rather than having that growth mindset of what is possible. Is that something that you've witnessed across your local government career?
Oh, definitely. And I personally believe, and I guess I'm biased, that local government is the best tier of government. And it's probably because you're so intimately connected to both the elected people who steer your organisation and give it direction on behalf of the city, but also you're intimately connected with the community and the people that you serve. And certainly it's been my experience in local government that it's important to, again, accept that the third way, as I sometimes call it. So it's not always going to be the way that local government or the way that council believes it can be or should be, nor is it always going to be the way that perhaps a developer or an elected official or a member of the community thinks it should be. For me, it's always been about trying to find that middle path and trying to find a line of best fit, I guess, between needs and wants.
And so the relationship between yourself and councillors need to be strong. The relationship between councillors and staff within council needs to be strong. So there's that real co-commitment to creating that kind of safe environment where it's okay to speak up, but critically it's about making decisions on behalf of the community in order to create an environment where everybody wants to live. Is that fair?
Definitely. And we have five core values here at the organization, but two which resonate in that space is certainly integrity and respect. And for me, having respect for the people that you serve, for the four C's, is critical to success. They will respect what you're trying to do in turn. I think it's also important to recognize that their views are as valid as the views perhaps of the council officers. And I think too often in local government, we can sometimes see the community's voice being lost, but that's certainly something that which is mitigated if that integrity and respect, and also the collaboration that I think is important when working with the four C's, is maintained.
Now, I know for a fact that you're someone that values bringing other managers through, creating more leaders. So, you know, I always talk about the fact that a goal of a leader is to create more leaders. So what are some of the things that you do to ensure that you're passing your knowledge on to others to almost create that pipeline of future leadership for Shell Harden?
Yeah, so we have here a clear line of sight between what is happening on people's desks and what is happening in the broader organisational sense. And we do that through our integrated planning and reporting framework, which essentially is a cascade of objectives, strategies, actions and tasks, so that people can understand not only what they need to do, but how they need to do that. For me, reinforcement and supporting organisational culture and leadership throughout the organisation can only be done through effective and meaningful and purposeful communication. So to that end, I try and ensure that I have regular contact with my executive team, my senior team, but also all staff. And we do a series of what we call roadshows regularly, where I manage to work through the organisation and tell people what's important to the organisation, not just on a day-to-day business as usual basis, but also in terms of our values and our behaviours. I think also, Colin, modelling or behaving in ways which others can emulate is important. And I try and demonstrate to the people who also lead in my organisation the expectations I have of myself in return, in regards rather to behaviours, and therefore those that I expect of them as well. So I think it's trying to provide those demonstrable benefits. So good leadership begets good relationships with staff, and good relationships with staff give you engaged staff, give you staff that want to stay in your organisation, and hopefully helps to build the productivity of the organisation.
Oh, absolutely. It builds that real sense of trust, that real sense of value. And I think, you know, something I talked about is that even though leaders don't own the culture through their actions, inactions or behaviours, they have the power to destroy it. But the opposite is true. So if you're role modelling what you expect of everybody else, you're almost pulling everybody else up with you. And you mentioned fun earlier. I think often there are many kind of senior managers that take it way too seriously. Not that I'm suggesting that every day should be a stand-up comedy event, although that would suit me down to the ground. Is making sure that people are smiling, right? Often that's the best measure of engagement, is when you hear laughter.
Look, it is. And there's nothing I like more than to hear staff having a bit of a joke with each other, but also staff having a bit of a laugh with members of the community when that's appropriate, and also the councillors, the elected officials. And I think that laughter, when done respectfully, is a great way to build team, and also to, as you say, to ensure people understand that it's not dire. It's not all about making decisions which are going to necessarily have negative impacts on people, but rather through that connectivity we can make decisions which are supportive of people and build what we can provide them by way of products by understanding them better.
Now, I think often there's a view of when you hit CEO, that's it, you got all the answers and all you have to do is dole out the answers and success takes care of itself. It's not true, right? What do you do, Carrie, to keep yourself stretched, to make sure that your ideas, your views are relevant to the world in which we work today?
Yeah, it's absolutely not true. That was one of the very first things I learned as CEO, is that you don't know everything. But, you know, that acknowledgement and sharing that with the people that you work with is a really powerful way of engaging with them. And I've always been very open with my leadership when I haven't known the answers, and I've needed their support or the support of their staff and the assistance that they can give us. So certainly to build that and to achieve that, I've personally ensure that I continue to develop myself, and I do that through a lot of reading. I'm a pretty prolific reader, and also I guess looking for opportunities to be coached. I or always have ensured that I maintain my own mentor network, that I am coached from time to time. And I find for me it works best if I'm coached on an as-needs basis. But it's also important to, expose yourself to a range of new ideas and listening to guest speakers, attending conferences where they're of value, but also talking to colleagues and asking them their views, and particularly soliciting contrary views, is a really good way to, as you say, stretch yourself to learn new things and to perhaps grow your tolerance and your pragmatism.
Carrie, what a wonderful way to finish it, because I think, you know, your generosity in sharing what you've learned over the years will provide a foundation to anyone listening to this podcast with ideas about how they can do likewise. Carrie, I want to say a huge thank you for joining us on the Culture Makers podcast today.
Thanks, Colin. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks so much for listening to the Culture Makers podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to get notified when new episodes are released. If you've been inspired by today's guest, please share the link with your friends, family, or networks. If you'd like to continue your learning journey, then why not join our virtual community of Culture Makers, where our members share ideas to help them get a little bit better every day. You can find out more at www.culturemakers.community.